There's a moment at the beginning of A Charlie Brown Christmas, just a simple one, where Charlie Brown looks out over the snow-covered neighbourhood and admits he just doesn't feel happy. It's Christmas, the season of joy, the season of lights, the season where all television commercials promise that if you buy just the right thing, you'll feel the right way. And yet, Charlie Brown feels nothing, or at least, nothing he's supposed to. And that's where the magic of this special begins. When A Charlie Brown Christmas first aired in December of 1965, American television was filled with bright, glossy Christmas spectacles. Variety shows with big bands, carefully staged sets, and tightly choreographed cheerfulness. Christmas on TV was shiny, loud, and relentlessly upbeat. It was the height of the post-war American holiday, commercial, confident, and polished. And into that world came something completely different. A quiet little animated special, a jazz score that sounded more like a late-night club than a children's program. Real kids voicing the characters, complete with hesitations, mumbles, and mistakes. And at the center of it all, a young boy who felt sad and didn't know why. A Charlie Brown Christmas was radical because it dared to say something honest. That holidays can feel confusing, overwhelming, and even lonely. That sometimes in all of the noise of the season, the meaning gets lost. And for a child in 1965, let alone today, that was a revelation. It told kids that their feelings mattered, even the melancholy ones. It said that Christmas wasn't about perfection. It wasn't about the biggest tree, or the brightest lights, or Snoopy's over-the-top decorating contest. It was about something quieter, something more human. And that honesty is woven through the entire narrative. Charlie Brown's desperate attempt to direct the school play, Lucy offering her usual blend of helpful advice, the gang wildly dancing while ignoring all direction whatsoever, and of course, that poor, fragile little tree. A tree that looks like it came from a clearance section of the clearance store. And in that tree, Charlie Brown sees something no one else does. Sincerity. A small, imperfect symbol of the meaning he has been searching for. What's remarkable is that this emotional sincerity also extended behind the scenes. Peanuts creator Charles Schulz insisted on including a direct reading from the Gospel of Luke, Linus stepping forward, dropping his blanket, and gently reminding everyone of the spiritual origins of Christmas. It was unprecedented at the time. A prime-time network cartoon reciting scripture, intentionally slowing the entire special down for a moment of pure stillness. And somehow it worked. Against every prediction, it worked. CBS executives thought the special was too slow, too quiet, too strange. They thought the jazz score was inappropriate, and they hated the unpolished child actors. They were sure it would be a failure. Instead, over half of all American televisions that night tuned in. Families gathered around the glow of the TV, not for spectacle, but for simplicity, for warmth, for honesty. That's the cultural impact we still feel today. A Charlie Brown Christmas became a ritual, a piece of a shared memory that spans generations. Its music, Vince Guaraldi's drifting piano, has become the sound of December, playing in shops, cafes, and living rooms long after the special ends. Its images, the little tree, Snoopy's doghouse, Charlie Brown's worried brow, has become a shorthand for the season, and its message, the meaning that comes from connection, from community, from caring for something fragile, feels more resonant than ever in a world that values spectacle over sincerity. In a season filled with noise, A Charlie Brown Christmas remains one of the rare pieces of holiday storytelling that invites us to slow down, to breathe, to sit with our feelings, joyful or otherwise, and to remember that even a tiny lopsided tree can grow into something beautiful if people come together with a little love. So today, we're going to explore that world. The narrative, the music, the context, and the legacy of a special that changed what Christmas on television could be. Because whether you're a Charlie Brown, a Linus, a Lucy, or even a Snoopy, this little cartoon shaped the way generations understand the season. I'm Andy Williams, and this is Movieversaries. Welcome to Movieversaries on Punch and Pie Media. I'm your host, Andy Williams. This is where we celebrate and sometimes re-evaluate some of the greatest movies ever on a significant anniversary. You know a Christmas special is special when three piano notes can transport you instantly. That's the magic of A Charlie Brown Christmas, which debuted in 1965. It's gentle, it's imperfect, and it's quietly profound. In this episode, we dive into the film's nostalgic glow, its critique of consumerism, and the jazz rhythms that made it timeless. Every classic needs its ensemble, and today we've got our panel to help discuss it. First up, we've got the Lucy of our panel. She's confident, outspoken, and never afraid to tell it like it is. It's Violet Hammond.
How did you know Lucy's my favorite?
Just a hunch.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much for joining us this week. Also joining us, we have got our Charlie Brown of the show, the emotional center. He quietly steers us towards meaning. It's Bo Nicholson.
Well, that all sounds very nice, but Charlie Brown is a bit of a interesting character. And I know when I've been insulted. I was expecting Pigpen, to be honest.
I was nicer than that.
I looked a little bit disheveled this morning after doing my hurting my shoulder last night. I couldn't get dressed by myself, so
you're the emotional heart of our show. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm.
That's very kind, although I think that is probably also Vi. But
no, stop.
But yes, I do relate to Charlie Brown. I do. We'll get into that.
Yes, I'm very excited to dig into this with you. This is, I think, is this a movieversary first where we're looking at an actual TV special as opposed to a movie?
Yes, it will be. By the way, before we get too far, who are you?
I'm Snoopy, right? I'm the charismatic MC.
Okay.
Yeah, you're the professional hater. Yeah. That's what Snoopy is. He just goes around hating.
Man's best friend.
Good grief.
I'm not going anywhere near that one either. But yeah, I'm just glad that we've got our very own holiday special cast today. We are unfortunately missing our outspoken philosopher in Ian Buckley. Mm-hmm. He was supposed to be Linus, but hey, we've got you guys. So why don't we get into it? Violet, you love Christmas. I know you love Christmas.
I do. I really do.
And you are our today resident American.
Yes.
I'm assuming you grew up with a Charlie Brown Christmas, right?
Absolutely. It's really not Christmas without seeing this. I actually sent my mom, I texted my mom a picture of the screen with the caption podcast prep, and she said, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. And then she had to look up. She's like, I remember watching this the first time, and she was 12. I was 12. And she says, that feels weird to me because it was a cartoon, but then why did it have such an impact on me when I was that old? And I said, well, Mom, it's kind of a mature cartoon. Like, it has very mature themes. Like, kids, like, obviously I love this as a kid, but it grows with you.
Absolutely. Bowden, you are not our Christmas specialist here.
Nope.
What's your relationship with the Charlie Brown Christmas?
It's first time watch, guys. First time watch. Yeah. So I was sat watching
Suck it,
and
it was Bo.
All right. I thought you wanted honesty.
Yeah, no, honesty is fine, but we are going to abuse the honesty. This is why I shouldn't be in charge of the soundboard.
Noted. I don't know, guys. I don't know. I don't think I get it. And I love that at the moment my internet is so bad that Violet's face is frozen on shock when I said first time watch. And oh, Andy's no. is frozen on just like bursting with almost laughter because it just feels appropriate. Like, Violet, you're still shook, completely shook at this concept. That
I really am. I mean, I know I'm kind of like in my box American right now, but like I'm really shocked.
I watched it, right? To the point, actually, that I texted you guys before being like, so we're watching a 25-minute movie this time, like mm-hmm. a Charlie Brown Christmas, and Andy's like, yes, like of course, and I'm like, yeah, cool, okay, cool, no worries. I was expecting like feature length, and then I watched it, and then I'm like, and like I was watching it with Alex. I think it was her first time as well. And by the way, Peanuts is not like a big thing over here.
Okay,
so
I'm not sure it's like, a massive thing over here.
Yeah, it's a thing. People know about it. People know like Linus and Lucy, the song, and everything like that, right? But yeah, I don't know. Like, it's just not a big thing. It's not like a Christmas tradition or something like that. So I would say like the Grinch is a Christmas tradition here compared to like this. So first time watch for both of us, I think, and we're watching it, and it's just kind of like, okay, all right, like it was charming, I suppose, and then I looked at the reviews of it, and it was just like across the board 5 stars, and I'm like, I don't get this. I don't get it. And then I watched it again and I still don't get it. So
good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Excellent. Well, that's at least a starting point. you asked us what our non-negotiables were for the end of the year for movieversaries. And seeing as Teen Wolf got nixed several times, my non-negotiable was a Charlie Brown Christmas.
Again, you guys are still frozen. So I just see Violet's just shocked that Teen Wolf was next.
No.
True, though. It's true. I've peeled back the curtain too far. But I love a Charlie Brown Christmas. It's a tradition. Christmas isn't Christmas until I've watched Charlie Brown. To the extent I watched it again today, just prior to recording with my kids, and my daughter said, do we have to watch it again?
Aww.
We watched it last year.
I'm like, oh,
preach. Preach, kid.
We're going to watch it this year and next year. And by the way, you watched Elf 3 times already this year, so shut up.
Oh. Yeah, Elf gets played a lot. It's true.
So, A Charlie Brown Christmas is very clearly important to me, less so clearly to my family. But hey, you can always find new ones. So the question I've got for you both, Bo, you don't think it ever did hold up, so we'll dig into that. But Violet, how do you feel it holds up today? Maybe for if you were considering it a first time watch, put yourself in Bo's shoes.
Ooh, see, I think even
you don't want to be there. You don't want to be there.
Even as a first time watch, I think it would hold up. I think this, I think it's timeless. Like, it really truly is. Like, even though the main crux of it is that Charlie Brown doesn't want to buy an aluminum Christmas tree, which is something that was a trend in 1965 that now doesn't exist because of how successful this special was.
Like, you mean aluminium, by the
oh,
way.
Oh, yes, I know. Sorry.
No.
The American.
I've verified this, Andy. Aluminum was the original. We threw in the eye.
We had this conversation. We did have this conversation.
Yeah, we threw in the eye. I thought the Americans were insane and lazy, just being like, I mean, we're just going to cut down a syllable. But no,
I mean,
it's
we
true.
Are, but
it's true. Aluminum was the original. We threw in an eye. I don't know what happened.
Well, make it fancy.
In this discussion of Charlie Brown Christmas, we kind of got sidetracked.
Just a bit.
sorry.
The chaos goblin that is Bo Nicholson has shown up. But
I'm not taking credit for that one, though. You started that one. don't you dare, Mr. Host over here.
But for me, it holds up massively well. And the score. The score is such a key part of that.
Yes, 1,000%.
But why is, I want to dig into it a bit more. What is it that you didn't necessarily connect with on both of these watches?
I'll answer that with a question. Why did your youngest not want to watch it again this year, right? Like, that's my question is, does it hold up for kids? Because as a 37-year-old man, I'm watching it being like, yeah, it's like, it's fine. And the themes are mostly pretty good. And you're right about the soundtrack. I related to Charlie Brown's dread. Lucy, the Lucy of the group here. The Lucy of the group here. If you're offering 5 cents psychiatric help at that level, I'll take it. The doctor is real in. But I guess my question is, like, when you say, does it hold up?
Yes.
Do kids still like it?
Yes. So, in my experience, that was more to do with the timing that I had to watch it at that specific moment. Generally, so her older brother very happily sat there and watched the whole thing. It was a very specific reaction, I think, to that moment. If I was to put it on first thing in the morning when we wake up and we've got our breakfast, then I think she'd be absolutely thrilled. It's just, it was the bad moment. But I really do think it holds up. And, you know, I think I put the music on in the car a few days ago, and both kids were enjoying the esoteric jazz of the whole thing.
Yes.
But recognized it as well. Like, we didn't have the vocal, like, Christmas time is here or any of that, but the kids recognized it. So, I think that there is that imprint that the special has had.
Yeah, I guess where I'm sort of landing at is, I'd say it holds up okay. Yeah, like, it's not a bad movie or anything like that. But I'm just baffled by the universal 5 stars that this thing gets wherever you look. Like, I'm just like, I don't. It's not The Godfather. What are we talking about?
The Godfather is 3 hours long. And I think that it is important to contextualize it in the history of the American Christmas TV special.
Right.
So, like, before a Charlie, there is very much, it's a before and after, right? So you had, like, your Rankin Bass, and I think Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was out a year prior to Charlie Brown Christmas. But then the year later, you had The Grinch. So, you know, but before all of that, it was kind of live broadcasts. It was adaptations of The Nativity or A Christmas Carol or Perry Como's Hour or Bing Crosby's Show, or it was basically either going to be around a trusted public figure or heavily religious and moral. So then when Rankin Bass got the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, that kind of opened a door which Charlie Brown then kicked down. The form of it all, alongside what it brings and its narrative, which we'll get into. Like, it helped usher in the age of, you know, you look at the 70s with the dominance that Rankin Bass had with, like, the Santa Claus is Coming to Town, Little Drummer Boy, Year Without Santa Claus. Like, and then when the 80s hit, it just became a thing to have a Christmas special. It was like the Smurfs, the Garfield, He-Man, My Little Pony. There was so many special episodes, which...
Movieversaries.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, we're doing a Christmas special now.
True. Framed Frame does 3 of them. So, But I think that it was culturally and artistically transformative, which is why I think it also influences the 5-star reviews across the board.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say there's a lot of nostalgia there too, right? Like, there's like people that were shown it when they were 6. And it just became a tradition, right? Like, I would give backyard cricket 5 stars. Like, the activity of playing backyard cricket 5 stars on Christmas Day, because that's a family tradition, right? So, but this is not a family tradition.
Where you are, it's sunny.
Yeah. It's perfect cricket weather. In fact, it's way too hot, and you're at risk of heat stroke anytime you step foot outside. But Violet,
such a strange notion.
Violet, would you give it 5 stars? Like, would it be like that kind of level for you?
No, I would give it 4 stars. 5 stars is reserved for Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas.
Okay. I don't know that best. Either.
No, I wouldn't be shocked. Most people don't. It's Jim Henson.
Okay.
It's the Muppets. So Emmett and Otter's Jug Band Christmas. It was out early.
1977.
Earlier. Yes, the year I was born.
So the
don't steal my identity.
Many great things.
Yes.
The second greatest thing that year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas.
But we can do that in 2 years' time on Movieversaries.
Good. I'll make you all watch it. See, you guys
thank,
will like
thank
it.
Thank you. You think so?
Well, we'll see.
Yeah. No, I definitely think so.
Scrooge over here.
Does that make a Charlie Brown Christmas kind of like 1B to Emmett Otter's 1A, or is it just Emmett Otter's in its own league?
It's Emmett Otter's in its own league. That's its own thing. And like, we'll get to it in 2 years, but like, Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas is basically like Gift of the Magi for Muppets. So it is also very much like about, you know, what you give, not what you receive, like that kind of thing. Like most of the Christmas stories that I love are more in that vein, like I believe this is, even though it has that like strange, mean-spirited Charlie Brown flavor to it, which I know we'll get into, which is funny. But like a lot of that is what I love because I am not religious. So I don't view Christmas or this time of year as a religious holiday. I view it as like a family time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So things that are about spending time with family, the joy of giving someone a gift you know that they will really love, like those are the things that I love about this time of year, which is why it's strange that I do love and cry at one particular moment of this that you think I wouldn't. Something else that I know we'll get into later.
Linus. The Linus monologue.
Yes.
So
interesting.
I think this is probably a good time to bring it up, isn't it? So
yeah.
I'm in a similar boat to you, Vi, in that I'm not religious, but I take my Christmas very seriously and I take the fun very seriously. And the giving and the act of being together and it's about that as opposed to the religious sides of things. However, I do like a very traditional Christmas carol. I like the quotation that that Linus gives. It is directly from the Bible, word for word.
Yeah.
And that in itself was groundbreaking to do that on as part of children's TV. And it, by the way, was not controversial to do so. But I think that moment kind of, that's a philosophical anchor of the whole film.
Definitely.
Because he is able to cut through the noise. But generally for me, whilst I'm not a religious person, it does kind of fall into the meaning of Christmas and the meaning of part of why you all get together is to celebrate each other as much as it is to celebrate the birth of somebody in a manger 2,000 years ago.
Mythology.
Sure.
Yeah, you say that Linus cut through the noise. But he cut through the noise with more noise. That's the part that I struck. Like I would call that a shortcoming. Like I think it's all fun and games until Linus. I saw this on Letterboxd, so I'm just going to basically paraphrase this one line review, which was, "It's all fun and games until Linus starts speaking," because then it becomes something else, right? It reveals its true nature, and it reveals that, well, this is actually like a deeply religious story now. And we're going to really focus on the true meaning of Christmas, which is being a good little Christian and going to church and, you know, spreading joy on behalf of Jeebus, you know. And I fully tuned out. I had to watch it 3 times, that one little bit, to try and understand a word of what he was saying. Like, what is the point? I'm reading it right now. It's just gibberish. Like, it's straight up just like, what is it even saying? Like, is it basically just saying, like, be nice, like, spread joy? Just say that.
Kind of.
Linus?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. But it's just say that.
But that's the thing. It's from the Gospel of Luke, right? It is it's directly quoting the Bible. And I think it says to me it's a call for sincerity and authenticity, irrespective of the faith that someone is bringing around. And that kind of speaks to Christmas for me, whilst, again, I don't buy into the Christianity of the whole thing. It is a level of humility that he's bringing to the proceedings, in that don't get too distracted with the consumerism, mm-hmm. with the ridiculous, you know, you mentioned the trees earlier. Get bogged down in what the holiday seems to be becoming. Like, it's not commercial holiday. It is about sincere meanings about Christmas. So that's what I think it's cutting through, and that's how it works for me, in that yes, it's directly quoting a religious text, but mm-hmm. what it is doing so is calling for togetherness, mm-hmm. which I think, regardless of faith, people should be able to get behind.
Yeah, I can listen to that and know in my head that there wasn't really an angel who came down and said, like, this baby is, you know, the son of God or whatever, all that other stuff. But I can get behind a kid on stage in a spotlight telling me that we should all wish for peace on earth and goodwill. Like, those are things that it would be nice to have.
To peel the curtain back, we are recording this before the Night of the Hunter hits feeds, but the Night of the Hunter will be in people's feeds by now. Mm. So in that, there's a 6-minute intro from yours truly, which very much gets into the duality of religion. So I'm not going to rehash that, but I guess I would say that we're talking about, like, religion trying to bring people together. And I'm going to restate what I said in that intro, which is that religion is actually what divides us in so many cases. And fundamentally, the idea of, yes, let's come together as a family and do that is great, but that, not if you're Muslim. Are you kidding me? No way, because I'm a Christian, right? Like, you can't do that. Like, it's not like a thing. We should be able to do it. I fully agree with that. I love the idea of family time at Christmas, et cetera, et cetera. But I just think it's antithetical to the entire religious experience, which is why, now this is me being probably like a level of woke that sits above a silly 1965 animated TV special, right? But I just sit there and think, I can't disconnect from disliking the messaging. I can't disconnect from it. The really, truly great line that Linus gives is about, I never thought it was such a bad little tree. It's not bad at all, really. Maybe it just needed a little love. That's mm-hmm. the line for me.
Yes.
That's what ties this thing together. I don't think the religious stuff does. And I guess that's where we differ on this one.
Well, that part makes me cry too, though. So
that part's lovely.
That, yes, that is lovely. Yes.
I like the seriousness of the whole special. Like, yes, okay, there's funny moments, there's mm-hmm. comedy in there, but it takes children seriously. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
it validates that complexity. And Charlie Brown feels lonely and confused, and, you know, his depression is never laughed off. Like, it's acknowledged and explored and understood in a way that you weren't seeing on television, especially children's television at that time.
Mm-hmm.
The messages that it's teaching, I think, outweigh what I disagree with. So that the messages of children have melancholy and they wrestle with what things mean, and they notice the world around them is designed to sell them things. And I think that for me, this without a Charlie Brown Christmas, you don't get to Sesame Street, you don't get to Pixar. I think that it is that level of respecting its audience that helps it really last for me.
Yeah. Mm. You say that it's not laughed off. I agree that it's not laughed off by the creators, but it is laughed off by the other characters. The other characters treat seriously. Him with ridicule.
Then it comes around, like, it's, that's taking a moment of, as a microcosm, right? That the mm-hmm. across the whole film, the whole special, it is, I think he's not fixed, as it were, but he's noticed and he's understood and he's embraced for who he is, regardless of where he is emotionally at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're three people that take, and including Ian, we're an entire panel of people that take mental health very seriously. Vi, what's your read on how it's treated?
I actually love it. I think that it's kind of amazing to me to think about how I used to take giant cardboard boxes if my parents ordered something and make Lucy's like psychiatric health thing and sit behind it in the backyard.
Oh my God, is there pictures of this?
Maybe. Not that I'd
like
have
some evidence.
Not that I have, but like I loved it. And it was like, all right, psychiatric help, 5 cents. Like we used to play Charlie Brown, I was always Lucy. Like not everything she says to him at her little stand is wrong. It's actually really like grounded. It's
some of it's not
a
bad,
little
yeah.
Like it's a little like, you know, it of course it's childish and Lucy is overdramatic and like, you know, her own bunker self. And she does try to get him not to like dwell on it, on his Christmas depression, his seasonal depression, something that those of us in places where it's very dark and cold right now, seasonal depression is a very real thing. Yep. So she is trying to drag him out of that and say, why don't you come and help us with the Christmas play? You can be the director. Like if Lucy didn't care, she'd be like, just go home, Charlie Brown, and leave us all alone. But she does try to help him and have him not be isolated, which I think is good advice as well. It does, to Andy's point, take the idea that kids can feel the same way as adults at this time of year very seriously. It is a stressful time. It's can be a difficult time if you're mourning or grieving something. Like it can be very hard at this time of year to remember the joy and find that spark of joy. And I think that the special does find that in the last moments. And that's the joy, the love of it.
Mm. I think the central message is about fighting against alienation and commercialization and looking for something that's real. And it's not arguing for Christianity, it's arguing against hollowness. I think that it's searching for a meaning in something. And for Linus, that's what that is. He finds that in religion. But Charlie Brown finds it in people. And when everyone kind of gathers around his poor little tree and help make it better, I think it manages to centralize that message. So whilst I get it, this was such a key time in the counterculture movement. And you look at where we were in America in the 60s, in 65, like this was a huge moment in time. And this special just takes a moment to breathe. It takes a moment to say it's okay to feel how you feel, however you feel. And that's what I think works for me.
Mm. I mentioned earlier that I related pretty heavily to Charlie Brown. And I think me being a bit like less Christmassy than you guys is a part of that. Like I feel like in my family, for example, I've always been the weird kid, right? The one that would feel melancholy and feel all these emotions or deeply feel empathy for other situations, like people that are less fortunate, right? Like I always felt it weird that because my family earned more money than other families, that I got better gifts from Santa. You know what I mean? Like just like little things like that felt weird to me. So I really like what the film's doing in terms of the anti-commercialism. Gee whiz, didn't we learn that lesson in 1965? Didn't we?
Mm-hmm. Like,
I was saying, thank goodness we've solved that problem. We really hit it on the head before it got really bad. And mental health too, you know, like, and because it's not just depression and isolationism, but it's also like burnout now. And unfortunately, depression and burnout look very similar, and they have very opposite solutions. Depression and isolation, you'd be like, cool, okay, well, we need to get that person talking to people, and we need to surround them with love and all that sort of thing. A burnt out person looks the same in terms of symptoms, very different solution. You want to give that person space and get them off their phone and away from work for a bit and put them on a beach for a weekend or something, you know? I love the way that this movie approaches that. I didn't like the way that a lot of the characters were very brutal to the manic depressive kid.
Yes.
That was a bit hard to watch.
They are. They're mean. they're really the dog, nice in the last 5 minutes, but they're mean.
Oh, God. The dog is so mean to his owner. Yes. Like, it's bizarre. Man's best friend. Good man's grief.
Best friend.
A lot of this works really well. I it sounds like I'm really negative on it. I'm not really negative on it. I am negative on hinging the emotional core of the film somewhat on religious texts. I find that really off-putting because, again, it's like the creators might have been religious or whatever, but like knowing what we know about religion now and how it operates and how it controls people and how insidious it is.
Mm-hmm.
I put up red flags. That's the only thing there. But apart from that, I think the treatment of mental health and anti-commercialism is really interesting, very timely, super, should have been more influential than it is.
Mm-hmm.
That would be good. We'd be living in a better world. So, like, no, I do think it ages pretty well. I was just curious about whether kids would like it because there are certain technical shortcomings of it, which we'll get into, but yeah.
Well, I think the form is key to the whole thing. You know, you've got children playing children, which wasn't usually the case. The fact that the score sounds, I said it in the introduction, the score sounds more like a nightclub than it does a children's TV show.
Yes.
I'd love to sit in this club with that music playing with a haze of smoke above your head and a little speakeasy and fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, you could do that like in the Latin Quarter of Paris. That would be perfect, you know.
Oh, yes. Yes. But then the animation is like, again, South Park is another thing. You don't get South Park without Charlie Brown Christmas because
very evidently, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like this, I think it's deliberately done on this animation style that makes it more accessible to children. So even though it is drawing more attention to it, I think that A, it's in keeping with the Peanuts comics, so it kind of needs to be within Schultz's wheelhouse. Schultz being the creator of Peanuts.
Yep.
And so it's in keeping with that, but also I do think that by having them move slightly differently and having it have its own personality, it's showing us that like things aren't always perfect. Like it's deliberately slightly imperfect, but it is recognizable for that.
Those of us that are on the Discord will remember maybe a week ago, Sam put up a post, Sam Stokes, host of Real Talk Den of 10, and One Rules Them All over on the Film Stories Network. And he put in an Instagram post from the Film Pope, and it talked about these concepts about emotions that exist in foreign languages but don't exist in English, but they're shown in films. And one of them was wabi-sabi. And what you're referring to right now is wabi-sabi, the idea of finding beauty in imperfection, right?
Yes.
Like this idea of being like, no, it's the imperfection that makes it beautiful. You know, you can go and get the nose job to look like a beautiful, perfect person, but it's actually your imperfect nose that defines your face. You know, it makes you, makes you beautiful. That's the interesting thing.
Who told you about my nose job?
Outed. Gotcha.
God damn it.
But like, yeah, so yes, okay. I can see that. There is a charm to it, but sometimes there's just like you can tell very obviously that some of the editing, I'm convinced that very early in the film, Linus has a line of dialogue where he's been recorded in two separate locations.
Oh.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like with two different microphones or something. Like it'll be like, it's like, whoa, okay, Jesus. So like really choppy editing. that was within a minute. And like, I don't really like kids' choruses. So all I'm hearing is, and then this choppy fucking editing. And I'm just like, there's your explicit tag, by the way. I just ruined it for you. And I'm just like, what is this? What are you guys making me watch? And look, yeah, I don't know. You can look at it as the imperfections make it perfect. I can look at it as fucking annoying in certain times. And I guess that's what Christmas is all about. I don't know.
Luke, I don't know where to go with that.
Like me either. Oh man.
But I did like so Sally, for example, who is Charlie Brown's little sister, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I love, there's a little bit of trivia. I love that she didn't know how to read. She was too young. So
I have this written down too.
Yeah, you got that one? Yeah, yes. they fed her lines like one by one, syllable by syllable. So when she's like, all I want is what I have coming to me. All I want is my fair share. Because
let me do it like for you because times. That's literally one of my favorite parts in the movie. That's what I get so excited when she's like, how about 10s and 20s? All I want is what is coming to me. All I want is my fair share. I'm like, that's right, Sally. You tell him.
you want
is your fair share.
You get it, comrade.
All I
comrade
want
Sally
is what's coming to me. I
love
Sally.
Left-wing icon Sally.
10s and 20s. Even
good
my baby
grief.
Sister.
Even my baby sister. Yeah, but just like everything
some,
about
some
that letter
works.
Is
I
so
like
cute.
It.
How was your year? How is your wife? Like, it's just very like kids write letters to Santa like that. Kids write mm-hmm. down and try because their parents have taught them be polite to adults. And, you know, you don't want to just start out with, this is what I want, Santa. You start out with like, hi, I hope you had a good year. How's Mrs. Claus? Here's my list. Give me all my stuff.
Bury the lead and then ask
yes.
what you want.
That is so funny. 10s and 20s.
Make it easy on yourself. Just send money.
Yes.
It's also the acting technique employed by Marlon Brando later in his career. So there you go. There's another Godfather reference yep. for you.
What was that technique? Having lines spoken to you?
Yeah, the lines fed in the earpiece. Yep.
It explains the island of Dr. Moreau.
It does yes. explain the island of Dr. Moreau. But I'm led to believe that Marlon Brando could read. So he has less of an excuse in my opinion. His is pure hubris.
One cannot judge these things, and I'm not going to speak on behalf of the late Mr. Brando.
Okay.
Don't but going
go,
back
we go,
to
we
the
go
school.
Interesting places. We go interesting places on this show.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, we've been on longer than the entire fucking Charlie Brown Christmas. So
I know.
By almost double, yeah.
By twice.
And we haven't even got to the score. We have not got Vince Guaraldi's score, the Vince Guaraldi Trio score. Violet, tell me what you make of it.
Like, I mean, come on. Like, you could play that for probably anybody, and they'd be like, the girl with her head, like... Like, that's
a visual
like,
joke doesn't work
I
on
know,
a podcast.
I know. The girl who's
yeah,
pushing her
it's
head
like
from
the swaying
side
of
side.
The heads. We were all three of us
you
just
know,
did it.
They all have like the same dance. Each of them, they're just doing the same thing over and over again. Schroeder is like banging on that piano. All of the sounds that are coming out of it could not possibly come out of a little like baby toy piano, but it happens anyway. We go with it. The score is amazing. It truly is. Like, underneath in my notes, what it says, what makes it great, I wrote Vince Guaraldi score. Like, that's really, truly, like, probably number one. What makes this special so great and so timeless. The music is amazing.
Co-signed. Yeah.
Yeah. There is there's a musical looseness to the whole thing, and it feels alive. It feels like it changes every time I watch it, which is the beauty of great jazz. Like, it never sounds the same because you always pick different things and you always hear different things in the textures. I've seen this film so many times. I've listened to the music so many times, yet I still love listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
Little point about the score. We're quite lucky that Peanuts, I suppose, as a concept, came out at this time where it was a somewhat even popular choice to use a jazzy kind of score, right? Because if you had like the Peanuts equivalent come out now, and it's not Peanuts, it's something else, they're using K-pop or like really synthy, probably
modern day.
Well, Peanuts, yeah, right? And that's, yeah, and Bluey actually does a pretty good job of that sort of thing. So maybe this is a bad example, but we just do things better in Brisbane. But
this is true. There's entire episodes of Bluey, like Rain, for example, that are just scored, and it's beautiful.
I remember that we did Music League with our friends over at the Film Stories Network, and you submitted that song, right? It's Rain, wasn't it? Yeah, it's a really beautiful piece of music. Yeah, got a couple of votes from me. But no, you're good point. I suppose, but it's not jazz though, is it? Like, jazz is like this very, like, it's like a time capsule for me. Like, even if a modern movie, like, I'm a bigger defender of La La Land than most people, but I think a big reason I love La La Land so much is the jazz. You know, I just love jazz. So I was digging the hell out of the score of this thing. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And some of the jokes around it too, actually, like, the whole Beethoven conversation.
Yes.
About, is he, like, if Lucy was on this podcast, which I mean, she is with the, incarnation of her over here, Rilla Hammond, but the discussion of whether Beethoven is capital G great is fantastic. Like, I'm a big fan of that. Well, he's not on the bubblegum cards, is he? So,
but yeah, if he's not on his bubblegum cards, how can it be great if you've never been on a bubblegum card?
I don't think it can be
that
great.
Same scene with the jingle bells is another one of my, I love that. No, you know, jingle bells, deck the halls and all that. And finally, he's just down to dink, 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 dink.
Monosyllabically.
Yes.
Just
staccato. Yes, that's what I meant. Dun,
that's, dun, it! Dun.
That's it!
Yes, yes.
For me, the music is the glue. It ties everything together. It gives the warmth to the cold backgrounds. It gives us introspection. It gives these simple drawings their humanity. In many ways, it is the soul of A Charlie Brown Christmas. You take it away, I'm not sure it works. However, normally we've discussed sort of what makes it great and what shortcomings Bo thinks it has, and he can be wrong about them all he wants, and that's fine. But you guys already hinted at a couple of favorite facts about the film. I'm guessing you've got a couple more there, Violet.
I do have a couple more. I think it's kind of funny now in hindsight, since Bo just pointed out like obvious editing or production issues, but it is kind of amazing that this was done in 6 months. That's for animation, particularly for hand-drawn, you know, hand-inked animation. To have a 25-minute special done in 6 months is crazy. It was only completed 10 days before it was going to air. And when they screened it, the people hated it. And they're like, I forget who it was, the producer or the director, but one of them said, you know, if we weren't so close to the date and they had something else to air, I don't know if they would have. Because they really didn't like it. Because this was was commissioned by the Coca-Cola company. And
which was actually, ironically, like in the movie, by the way. Product placement.
Product placement.
In alternate versions. Yeah.
Yes. I know. Supposedly that was added.
Hey, commercialization,
Commercialization. But it's that thing where it was commissioned by a company to play into that very American ideal of Christmas. I mean, Coca-Cola created the, you know, Santa Claus. Our view of Santa Claus was created by Coca-Cola. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is not like a religious story. Rudolph was created by, I think, Neiman Marcus. Like these, all of these symbols that we still look at for Christmas were created by corporations and businesses for the sole purpose of selling things for Christmas. So this was a special that said, don't do that. Get a tiny little tree, put some ornaments on it, and sing around it with your friends. And that's what you should be doing. The year after this, we had The Grinch, where at the end of it, it's Christmas came without the packages and the bows. It still came because we were all together. So 2 years in a row, we had this out on TV for families to see. And yeah, to everyone's point here on this podcast right now, it's what, 60 years later, and we're still like, oh, okay, how much money did I drop on Amazon today so that like a drone could bring me all of my stuff that I have to buy because it's Christmas?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Especially when you have kids, nephews, nieces, kids in your life generally, like there's this financial expectation on us all because we have been lost to commercialization. I do find it deeply interesting that they had this story about anti-commercialism, right? And then at the very end, it had a title card over the credits being like, Merry Christmas from your friends at the Coca-Cola,
at the Coca-Cola bottling Cola company. Bottlers, yes.
I'm just like, what the fuck? What is that? What are we doing here? You know what I mean?
What are we doing here?
What are we doing here? You know, like that's the classic Bo-ism, I suppose. That is no longer on the soundboard. Sorry, Andy, it's not there anymore.
No, you've removed it.
I had to add another thing instead.
have you got any behind the scenes stories, Bo?
I guess, but it's not like, yeah, we usually frame this as like favorite fact, but it's not a favorite fact of mine. Are you guys familiar with the story of Peter Robbins? Peter Robbins is the voice of Charlie Brown.
Okay.
And he's most famous for being the voice of Charlie Brown. He has like 16 credits on Letterboxd, and like 13 of them were voicing Charlie Brown as when he was a kid, right? He was like 10 years old for this movie. And sadly, it seems that art imitated life somewhat with Peter. Peter had severe lifelong mental illness. He was living with undiagnosed bipolar for basically his entire life. He ended up imprisoned. He was in rehab centers a whole bunch throughout his life with drug use and things like that. He was stalking his ex-partner and her plastic surgeon and threatening like, I'm going to kill you kind of letters to these people, like horrible, horrible stuff. It sounds, and then he finally got diagnosed with bipolar, like very late in life, like sort of like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then he started to come back into the limelight a little bit. He started to show up at Comic Cons and things like that as the voice of, you know, as the voice of Charlie Brown. It seemed like he was getting his life back on track. And then unfortunately in 2022, he died by suicide. Mm-hmm. So, Peter Robbins, a very, very tragic life. And having read that after watching the movie and then going back to watch it again, I was like, it's tragic. It's tragic. And it does add a tinge of tragedy to Charlie Brown's story. And it adds a tinge of tragedy to those kids laughing at him and not understanding him, you know? Mm-hmm. And this is a guy that would go on to live that life in the public life and end up in prison and all that sort of stuff and do horrible things as well under the influence of drugs and undiagnosed mental health issues. And and he died by suicide 3 years ago. I think, let me do the math really quickly, he was 67. Oh. So 65 was he? Yeah. 65, that's, I mean, tragedy. Sorry to bring the note of the thing down, but I think it is interesting at the very least that where we're talking about mental health, and sometimes we talk about in movies, especially when it comes to art, sometimes we talk about mental health in very abstract terms, like as a concept, you know, but this is a person that lived it. He lived that character. That was it defined his career as a voice actor, and then he never saw that success again for myriad reasons. He grew up and lost the voice. That was one of them. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then of course, mental health issues and drug addiction. And yeah. So unfortunately, a sad story for the voice of Charlie Brown. And it might just, anyone that's hearing this for the first time, it might just change the way you view the story a little bit, for better or worse. You know, I think it adds a level of tragedy that actually gives it some gravitas.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's, I think Charles Schulz also struggled throughout his life with mental health issues, which is something that he looked to portray in the, like, he wrote the show as well as he created Peanuts. Mm-hmm. And it was him that found religion, and it was him that wanted the biblical references, including and especially Linus's speech in the special. Director Bill Melendez wanted to pull it out. He tried to talk him out of it. But Schulz won him over by saying, if we don't do it, then who will? If we're not going to preach in this way, who's going to? And it's great that Schulz managed to find what he needed at that time. He managed to live to an older age of 77. Mm-hmm. But it, I think that you don't get to this kind of art without having a truth behind it.
Yes.
And you don't get Charlie Brown without the pain that goes into that character. That pain is real, and it's, you know, we can't gloss over that.
Mm-hmm. It's real for a lot of kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, absolutely. And adults, like watching that and seeing a character that's, you know, and you're told, aren't you? You know, I'll just, you know, it's Christmas. Like, here's your present. Be happy. You know, and we have this really interesting ad at the moment, actually, in Australia. I think it's Telstra, which is like one of the major telecom companies. It used to be publicly owned. Now it's privatized. Love that. And they have this like goth kid in a family. It's like the older teenager. Think like the Charlie to Sally. Mm-hmm. And at Christmas time, you know, the older sister, who is a bit of a goth, goes and buys a present for the younger sister. And it's like, I don't know, some like cat ears, but looks kind of black and goth. And the kid sister doesn't like it very much. So that kid grabs it and puts the ears on and storms off away from the family at Christmas time. And at the same time, there's a parallel story about a ghost who feels invisible and can't be seen. And then they see each other and they spend Christmas together because it's about finding connection and finding family, right? I think that's a really nice ad. But it talks about the idea of feeling isolated in your own family, being told to be a certain way because it's Christmas, you know? Like, don't wear your black stuff on Christmas, you know? Like, don't be sad on Christmas. Don't be this. You can't tell me that ad wasn't influenced by a Charlie Brown Christmas. And I just think there's so many kids out there, like, I'm not looking forward to Christmas this year, you know? Like, I've got issues in my family that I don't want to go and see my family. I think a lot of people can relate to that, and we just do because we have to, and it sucks, and it hurts. And I think it's just really, I think it is cool that in 1965 they were putting that out there.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. Do you guys have a favorite moment, or favorite character? I know, Bo, you've got a least favorite moment, but
no.
Violet, what is it that you kind of go back to the most, do you think?
There's a couple that I have. I love, we already talked about it a little bit, but I love that scene with Charlie Brown and Lucy when she's giving him his psychiatric help and she starts listing the names of all the fears. And when she gets to the end and she says, maybe you have pantophobia. And he's like, what's pantophobia? The fear of everything. And there's that pause and then he does the, that's it! Yep, and she flies backwards. That's hilarious. I love that. Maybe you have pantophobia. The fear of everything. Other than that, there's just a lot of Lucy. Like, you've already done it, Bo. I know when I've been insulted.
like storming off, repeating it. Love that shit.
She is so overdramatic. I love her so much. But by far, my number one Lucy moment is, well, what, you know, why should Linus do it? She'll give you five reasons. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Counting her fingers into a
fingers
fist.
Fingers as she makes a fist. Yep.
Those are good reasons.
Those are really good reasons. Yeah. I mean, it's great. And it's also really nice, you know, as your resident feminist to see that, you know, this isn't like a bunch of boys who are beating each other up. Here's a girl who could very easily beat up every person in that room. She is in charge all the time.
She absolutely is.
Yeah.
100%. So
we love some misandry in this podcast, don't we? Love a little bit of the girls beating up the boys. It's good.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, just a smidge.
Like Andy's giving a face, just like, yeah, like, why not?
A slight beating, yeah.
Oh, and I also love, before we move on, I love Pigpen when Charlie Brown is saying, you should think of it as like the dust of ancient civilizations, like that whole reason for why Pigpen should not be made fun of for why he's dirty is so cute. And then he turns and says, makes you think a little bit about the way you've been treating me, doesn't it? That's not the exact line, but it's so, I love that part. I think that's so funny.
Can I... I've already said some of the lines that I like. I'll give you my favorite song, and I think we should all choose our favorite song. But before that, I have a question about Pigpen.
Sure.
My question is, what? Because is that kid homeless? Like, is that, like, what's going
on?
Like,
are we making...
He's just dirty. He has a family. The family is, like, not poor. Like,
I mean, I don't remember that from any of the other specials. They don't really get into it. Yeah. I think he's just a kid in the class but the thing is that he's happy about being dirty. Like, being dirty makes him happy. Like, that's just the way he wants to be. He's very clear about that. And this is the first special, so it's hard. There were like 1,000 after this. Like, there's a Charlie Brown for every holiday.
Yes.
But
yeah, okay.
Like, I can I can only remember that, like, being dirty was like his thing. Like, he wanted to be dirty.
Okay. Yes. That context is important because watching it, he's very homeless coded.
Making fun of the homeless kid.
Yeah. And I'm just like, and he's so articulate. Like, he'll sit there and say, despite my outward appearance, I will do my best to be a clean innkeeper or whatever he says. And I'm just like, oh, that's like adorable and very smart. And why are you so dirty? What's going on? Like, are you okay? Do we need to call child services? Like, what's happening? No, I was genuinely worried about Pigpen.
No, he just likes being dirty. And yeah, that's another thing I have written down under what makes it great is the sophisticated language. Like, it's great. Yeah, the vocabulary is amazing. Yeah.
On the contrary, you know, like, I'm just like, dude, you're 9. What did you just say? like he just pops out like a little au contraire, you know? It's no, that is great. I like that. My favorite
that
song
is something that a young Beau would have pulled out. Mm-hmm.
I used to like doing that in other languages too, like in German. Usually, because I knew a bit of German, and just wanky shit. Just like, what a wanker. Far out. little 12-year-old twat. My favorite song is Christmas Time Is Here, but not the not that version. The instrumental version that sort of plays throughout the movie. That plaintive piano. Mm-hmm. Wow. And I heard that the other day. Actually, last night I went out for work with my clients. And we went to do Christmas lights and stuff. And it was just playing before a Christmas show. Like, you know how songs play before a show? That instrumental version was playing. And I was like, oh, I recognize this now. Like, I get what this is. But yeah, I mean, it's just a beautiful little piece of piano. I love it. It's just plaintive and just as characters are moving between scenes, it's like the perfect little transitional music. So I really loved Christmas Time Is Here, but the specifically the instrumental version, because the other version I think I like the least.
Yeah, if you don't like kids' choirs, then
you're not going to be into that. Yeah.
That's a tough beat, that one. That was hard work. Oh, gosh. I wanted payment for that. Yeah. But yeah, favorite song.
Vi, what about you? Favorite song?
I mean, I think it has to be like the dance party song. It has to be the one that everybody thinks of when they think of Charlie Brown. It has like, I mean, come on.
Yeah. It's Linus and Lucy.
Yeah. It's so good mm-hmm. that they added it to You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown in the Broadway revival. It wasn't a part of the show to begin with, but they did add it for like a very quick interlude and the audience went bonkers like every single time because that just is, that is everyone's childhood, really. Mm-hmm. Like that moment.
You can't help but do like the head thing with the busy feet.
Yeah.
That piece of music is brilliant. It's playful but not saccharine. It's smart. It's witty. It's emotionally complex. It's yep. such a beautiful piece of music.
Agreed.
It's perfect.
But for me, my favorite piece of music is Skating.
Oh.
So we've gone for three really separate nice. Songs.
Yeah.
Yay.
I think yeah. it's the most beautiful piece in the special because it's got the flowing arpeggios and the melodic leaps and it evokes that childlike joy and mm-hmm. the poetry of movement over ice. Mm. I think that it is, it feels like it's floating and it provides that joyfulness to the freedom that the children have. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite song on the soundtrack. Although, you know, shout out to Hark the Herald Angels Sing, because I know, yeah. Bo, you would hate it.
Hark the Herald. God, like.
Yeah, but before
give me
that,
the sweet respite of death.
Saying, Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown. I cry every time when they do that.
Love it.
So cute.
from the Coca-Cola bottlers.
No.
Far out.
So
I'm glad that was edited out.
Oh, MVPs, man. Other than Coca-Cola.
Oh, jeez.
Bo, I'm going to come to you first. Who's your MVP?
I think it's pretty clearly the Vince Guaraldi trio. I think that's my end. Like, so Vince Guaraldi specifically, but I'll give credit to the trio for the music. I think they are the MVPs.
Hmm. It's a solid pick. One that may be replicated, Violet. Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't write that because I knew one of you would. So
okay,
I wrote Charles Schulz because without him, we don't have Charlie Brown.
Yeah, natürlich, as the Germans would say, naturally.
So, like, yes. You know, that's, and because he was so, he could have easily been like, yeah, sure, just give me the money and do whatever you want with it. But he was so fiercely protective of his creations because they did mean so much personally to him that mm-hmm. so much of him is in it that I feel like I have to say him.
Yeah.
Yeah. An equally valid pick. I also had noted down Vince Guaraldi as mm-hmm. my MVP.
Yep.
I sort of referenced earlier, but when I said the words, he provides the soul yep. of a Charlie Brown Christmas. Mm-hmm. And without the music, I don't think it works quite as well. But seeing as Bo picked Vince Guaraldi trio, I'm going to cheat slightly and mm-hmm. make my MVP a character.
Ooh.
My MVP is Linus.
Yay.
Linus. Ah, okay. Interesting. You're the big blanket guy.
Mm-hmm. The big blanket guy, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that his, and I understand, I completely accept the issues with quoting religious texts.
Yeah.
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 And I get that. But for me, Linus is the only character who, when Charlie Brown is building in his existential crisis and shouts, is there anyone who knows what Christmas is about? Linus is the only one that is calm and empathetic and clear. And he doesn't try to cheer Charlie Brown up. He gives him validation. He doesn't provide a solution, but he provides him with reframing devices and a grounding. And I think that his speech, it changes the entire special. Before the speech, the kids are ridiculing Charlie Brown. After the speech, the group has self-awareness and a desire to repair the harm that they've done. They come together and decorate the tree because of Linus's speech. Mm-hmm. He's the trigger. He's the turning point. And when he steps forward, I think the thing that is very often overlooked, when he steps forward to speak, he drops his blanket.
Yeah.
It's a moment of growth. It's a moment of independence. And he feels safe enough to let that go. He is a more confident version of himself. So I think that without Linus, the special collapses. It has no meaning. It has no resolution, no transformation. That scene obviously wouldn't exist. I think he elevates the special from it being just a simple holiday cartoon to this emotive piece of Christmas-related art that we've got. He's the emotional support friend, and he's got the emotional intelligence that nobody else has.
Yeah.
So I get the criticisms, but for me, it runs a bit deeper than that.
Yeah, and I get the compliment to it as well. Like, I understand that as well. But yeah, I think a good pick. If I was going to pick a character, I'd probably go Charlie Brown. Because
that's
of the relation.
His name's in the title.
Yeah, I know. It's like, oh, I don't know, I'll go with Christmas as a concept. Well, that's cheating. It's in the title. Like, Christmas is the MVP. Hooray.
Oh, boy.
Big fan of the letter A. No, I
all
I,
the best I, people's names begin with it.
Shut up, Andy. I feel like I've been Charlie Brown. I think I've been kind of like the Charlie Brown of this podcast. You mentioned it at the top, but I love that, like, you know, he's going to be the director of this Christmas play, right? And then he's doing the Christmas play.
That is so bo-coded, like, by the way.
Yeah, yes. And
to cheer
him
up by making the director.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, so he's like, okay, go for it. And then they go for it. And they're playing, like, world-class music is coming out of Schroeder. And the dancing is fun. And then he's just like, no, it's all wrong. And that feels like what I'm doing about this bloody religious monologue.
No.
Because you guys are like, no, this is what gives the thing meaning. This is what elevates it. And I'm like, I fundamentally agree with you, except for the fact of this. No, it's all wrong. You know, like, so I feel like I'm the Charlie Brown very much. Like, I think that was an accurate call at the start of the show.
Yeah. There was only one character you were ever going to be.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll take it. Yeah. I'll take it. I mean, if the shoe fits and all of that.
Yeah.
But I like that we've got three different MVPs. That might make good for social media.
It might be exactly the reason why I did it. Chasing those downloads, kids, the commercialization, yes. What can we say?
Gotta get them clicks. Get those sweet clicks. I don't know why Batman just joined the podcast. Gotta get those clicks. Get those sweet clicks. We're not wearing hockey pads.
I just, there's not much more left for me to say other than thank you so much to everyone that has tuned in and to you both, our very own Lucy and Charlie Brown in Violet and Beau.
Yay.
We very much hope that you've enjoyed the show. And if you have, please subscribe to Movieversaries and give us a rating and a review wherever you can. While you're here, you should check the show notes. You'll find the links to all of the things that we're doing, as well as the link to the Discord, where you can come and have a chat with us. Thank you again for your company, and we'll see you again for the next installment of Movieversaries.